Okay. Well, as you may have heard, I intend to make a brief visit to Los Angeles to meet with heads and senior executives of major United States film studios this week. The trip, which is at the invitation of Film New Zealand, is to support New Zealand's growing international reputation as a centre of excellence for screen production and post-production. The visit is extremely important for our industry. The screen industry contributed around about $3 billion in revenue to New Zealand's economy last year, and it's keeping on growing. In simple terms, the visit is about jobs for New Zealanders. There is intense competition for the business, and we need to keep telling our story to movie and television production people. During the visit, I'll be the guest of filmmaker James Cameron and his business partner John Landau at a private dinner of major studio heads. I'll make a visit to Warner Brothers, to Walt Disney and to Sony Pictures Studios. I'll also meet heads and senior executives at 20th Century Fox, Paramount Pictures and Universal Pictures, as well as the Motion Picture Association of America. I'll leave on Wednesday evening. I'll get back on Sunday morning. In terms of crime stats, earlier today the police released the crime stats for the fiscal year. These showed that the crime rate per head of population was down by 5.9%, with 21,802 fewer crimes in the fiscal year to the 3rd of June 2012. This is the lowest level of crime for the fiscal year since police started records in 1988, 24 years ago. This is encouraging news and reflects the National Led Government's commitment to tackle crime and make New Zealand's families safer in their homes and communities. It's also an important step towards delivering a better public services target of reducing crime by 15% by 2017. Besides the visit tomorrow, I'm in Wellington, then Auckland on Wednesday. I'm in Auckland and flying out that evening. Also, for your diaries, there'll be no cabinet meeting next Monday due to school holidays.
Given the Kim.com affair, some would say this is pretty bad timing.
Well, I'd say it's excellent timing, in so much that this is an industry which is worth $3 billion to New Zealand, where 3,000 jobs were created on the back of the Hobbit movies. And yep, there'll always be conspiracy theorists out there, but I'm interested in jobs, not people who live in fantasy land and want to make things up. At the end of the day, New Zealand can do better in the film industry. Film New Zealand came to me, and I thought it was a great idea to try and promote New Zealand to other big film makers. Hopefully we'll get Avatar 2 and 3 made here in New Zealand and other movies as well.
Do you expect the studio to raise the Kim.com issue with you?
No, I wouldn't have thought so.
Why is that? I mean, they're the main complainants in this. They've alleged that he's taking over $500 million of copyright off.
Well, I'm sure they have a view on copyright in general, but this is an action being taken by the US government against somebody that they believe has broken the law in the United States of America. I'd be extremely surprised if they particularly raise that issue. Look, I had dinner with Warner Brothers when I was in the United States some months back, as you're aware. It was never raised. I went to Google and Facebook last year, who host this, can't argue some of this material. They didn't raise those issues, so I'd be surprised if it was raised.
What's
on
offer from New Zealand's point of view when you go into these deals and pay 3,000 jobs, $3 billion? What do we give them as concessions?
Well, the most important thing is just to spell out and make sure that they're clear of the fact that the change that we made wasn't specific to the Hobbit movies or to Warner Brothers. It was for all studios that might make movies in New Zealand. So that clarification of the definition of a contractor is for the industry. Secondly, I think it's to try and talk about some of the successes that we've had down here and the capability. We've got very good people. We have very good technical equipment in New Zealand, and we obviously have magnificent scenery. So we're a good place to make movies. It's competitive business, and I think we've just got to reinforce that. We also obviously have the big budget film grant scheme, which is essentially a 15% rebate, and so we'd be wanting just to make that point as well.
Will there be any other concessions on the table when you go and talk?
We're not proposing to bring anything new. We think the offering we have makes New Zealand competitive. It is a highly competitive business where lots of people have, ultimately have offers like this. But the reason you saw Warner Brothers wanting to make this the Hobbit movies in New Zealand was A, just being Jackson Lutie and they wanted to be happy in that environment, but B, because they've had very good success in the past. It's a good product, there's good people in New Zealand, highly skilled, and they're reliable.
When did you first start planning?
I think the film unit came to me about 3 or 4 months ago. I remember flagging it in an article that Guy Esmond, the, and the listener, saying, look, I was probably going to go and take this trip. I mean, I think it's a great opportunity to go out to these other movie theatres and production companies and say, look, hey, New Zealand's good at what we do. Look how successful The Hobbits has been, the experience that Warner Brothers has had. Why don't you think about doing more of that in New Zealand? Like I say, the decision's got to be made on Avatar 2 or 3, but, you know, James Cameron's certainly very interested in New Zealand. I mean, this is, in the end, about the creation of thousands of jobs. My job as Prime Minister is to promote New Zealand, and sometimes, as Prime Minister, you can use that role to open doors that otherwise would be closed. If I can do that, and ensure that other big movies are made in New Zealand, and these studios consider New Zealand to make movies, that's a win for New Zealand, and I think we've got to take that.
If James Cameron or one of the other executives was to suggest some impediments to them making films in New Zealand, would you be open to undertaking to have a look at making changes there?
Well, as a government that wants to do business in New Zealand, we always take on board suggestions we get from all interested parties. I mean, and that sometimes means the unions, it might mean employers and manufacturers, it might be a particular industry that might come to us with a suggestion. So, yeah, the spirit of that, if somebody put up a suggestion, we'd always look at it. But we're not going there with the intention of reshaping the offering we've got. We're going there to sell the offering we've got.
Are there any specific undertakings that you give to any of these executives?
Well, the big budget film grant scheme is certainly going to be available to them given the size of the movies they make. As said, the law that was changed in terms of clarification of a contractor applies to all of them, and I think the talent pool in New Zealand is significant. So really it's just about selling and reinforcing our story. But, you know, look, we're in a unique position now. You've got someone like James Cameron's decided to come and live in New Zealand. He's obviously a big fan of the place. Him and his partner, John Landau, are hosting a private dinner for us with the heads of these major studios. Why wouldn't we use that opportunity to build a bigger industry in New Zealand?
So it's about promoting the offers we've already got on the table, not offering anything
further? Well, it's not about changing, as I said, it's not about changing the offer we have to movies in New Zealand. I think that's largely pitched in about the right place. I don't think the Ministry of Finance would want to give away more money. But I do think what's there makes us competitive. There are always going to be people that will offer bigger incentives. Unfortunately, that's the nature of this industry. So I don't think we should get into some bidding war. But I do think we can promote what we've got because it genuinely makes us competitive.
Would you rule out changes?
As I said, you always listen to suggestions, but that's unlikely in my view. We don't have any money and we're trying to get back to surplus, so the more you give away, incentives cost you money. I think what we do in New Zealand is extremely good. What we've got to do is make sure we're on the radar screen of these big movie companies.
When you do meet with the MP, I mean, they've described Kim.com as a career criminal. If they ask you how the extradition process is going, what will you tell them?
It matters before the courts.
So you won't enter into any discussions with them?
No, I mean, there's no point. I mean, in the end, I mean, what is a bit lost in translation in this whole thing, but I'll run through it one more time. So last week, the United States believe that Kim.com has breached their copyright laws. They have invoked the extradition treaty. We don't have an option about that. They just come along and say, this is the extradition treaty, and we want you to extradite this person. Now, we do the same thing the other way, and we've done that on a number of occasions. So all the great conspiracies that somehow we're working alongside the Americans, we could walk away from our treaty. But last time I looked, even Labour wasn't proposing we do that.
You don't have the option when the treaty is invoked, but you do have the option. You have a responsibility to ensure that anyone that is subject to process of extradition is fairly treated.
Correct.
And also to make sure that New Zealand processes are followed. So can you guarantee that there'd be no further abuse of power in this case?
Well, I can only tell you, I only know what I know. You don't know what you don't know. So if you'd asked me that question some months earlier, I wouldn't have believed that there was an error in terms of GCSB's activity. But in terms of what I know today, my belief is that we have appropriately followed the law, with the exception of the example last week with GCSB. It's also my view in terms of the police warrants, even though many of you have described it as a bungle, I would actually, the limited knowledge I have of that, refute that. I accept that Justice Winkleman took a view that the warrant was unlawful, but I simply make the point that the police, when they got the warrant, had signed off by another High Court judge.
Okay.
So, yes, there's a difference of legal opinion, but it's quite a bit of difference to what we saw with GCSB, which was a clear mistake and error.
But there's also the issue of the restraining order on the seizure of his assets as well. I mean, have you asked police for a detailed briefing about the case?
Well, I haven't asked them, but that's a matter for them, not a matter for me.
But given the damage that this is doing to New Zealand's reputation internationally, it isn't incumbent on you to ask the police to make sure you've covered all of this and asked all those questions?
Well, it's a matter for the police to make sure that they cover their responsibilities appropriately and discharge them appropriately, and that is solely a matter for them.
Do you think there are further problems at GCSB? I just referred to Rebecca Kitteridge's secondment. Is that a vote of no confidence in GCSB's abilities?
No, but it's a vote of huge confidence in Rebecca, that she's the right person to put into that organisation to carry out what I said would happen last week, which is a thorough review of what they're doing, their processes, their procedures, and make sure that we tighten up. I mean, simple facts of life are GCSB made some pretty bad mistakes when it came to this Kim.com case. We cannot, and I will not, tolerate a repeat of them.
Do you think any individuals will lose their jobs?
They may do, but that's a matter for the director.
Are you confident that you see on that?
Well, they'll work their way through those issues.
Are they actually taking any action internally against these people?
Well, the director is obviously aware of how serious the issues are, and he is working his way through to an understanding of what caused those errors, therefore who is responsible.
If you're reviewing it then, though, you have wider concerns about all of the processes there, rather than simply about the conduct of one individual who might have made a mistake.
Well, we came up last week with one clear system change, which was the need to ensure that the absolute status of an individual is in crystal clear terms understood before an operation is embarked upon when it comes to GCSB. Now, that's in those precise terms, that's not exactly the system that they had. They certainly had lots of information, and they might have gone and gathered a view on whether the person was protected by the law or not, but they didn't have that specific process. That's one of the processes. But I can't tell you I understand every single process that they have in there, but I can tell you there was a failing when it came to the legal interpretation upon the review of Mr.com. And if there's one problem, that means that we need to go thoroughly through all of GCSB and understand if there are any other potential problems.
Do you have concerns about the broader involvement of the SIS? And I don't mean tying it to surveillance, but the SIS, as your Minister Stephen Joyce last week confirmed to Parliament, it essentially rubber stamped Kim.com to come into the country. I mean, do you have a concern that they weren't able to assess the risk that he might impose, his background and all of that?
Well, I haven't had any advice on that, so I can't comment on that. They themselves have processes that they follow, and they actually process a great many reviews. They look reasonably narrowly, as I understand it. So my understanding is that the information that led, for instance, to the decline of various applications would have been known to them, because they were known when, for instance, Simon Tap Power turned down the application by the Home and Coast Board.
What do you make of this argument put forward by Mr. Peters and some others that you must have discussed Kim.com and met with Warners over there in Los Angeles last year?
Like I say, some people live in fantasy land, but look, the reality is there's been a lot of things spoken in last week which are actually quite wrong, and the characterisation of them have been quite wrong. So some of you have argued that I should be involved in operational matters. I'll put it to you that if I was the person determining whether an operation was actually undertaken by GCSB, you would be absolutely aghast, terrified, and very concerned. Because what would be the purpose of GCSB coming over to tell me that they were about to undertake an investigation on behalf or work on behalf of the New Zealand police? would be the purpose for me to say don't go ahead with that? Well, what sort of New Zealand is it when the Prime Minister is directing GCSB, the intelligence agency, and the police? It would be the same sort of New Zealand that if Chris Finlayson is the Attorney General directed Crown Law, it would be the same sort of New Zealand that if Anne Tolley is the Minister of Police directed the police. So in my view, you're quite wrong about that. It's not my job to be involved in this. My job is quite different. So they would never have briefed me. To the best of my knowledge, I've never been briefed on any of the operational activities that they've undertaken that have been non-warranted when it comes to GCSB. There are many other things that they come and talk to me about, but not those. So put the boot on the other foot and start asking yourself the question, if I go out there and start ticking off who we're looking at and who we're not, and ask yourself where that leads you.
Well, no one expects you to be running operations, but the question gets raised when you look at this case, who monitors them? Who holds them to account?
Paul Nathan. So in terms of operational matters, he is the Inspector General. He's independent and overviews their work. Obviously, you know, I know their work plan. I mean, I know the sorts of activities that they undertake. But individual, personal, operational matters, I don't think that's a matter for the Prime Minister.
But isn't flagging something that's, high profile that could be, have international consequences? Isn't that just like...
Well, I'm not sure you would say it was high profile back when they did the work in December. I mean, I've run into quite a lot of people who said they'd never heard of the guy until he was effectively arrested. I'd never heard of the bloke. On the 19th of January, I was advised by the Solicitor General that there would be this raid the next day. And the reason he advised me is the raid was going to be high profile, not necessarily the individual.
Are you confident that when GCSB asked Bill English to sign that ministerial certificate, are you confident that they didn't know in the 7-day period between the evidence being given in court and that certificate being signed that they weren't aware?
Yes, I've gone through and looked at that paperwork and the advice they've had and the process, if you like, that the director undertook. So he specifically asked the question about the clarification of the status and the authentic belief that this was a non-protected individual, and equally about the ministerial certificate.
So he asked that question in that 7-day period to
inform evidence and sign it. Well, I can't tell you when, but he asked that in terms of the preparation of the ministerial certificate before it was taken over to Bill English. I've also seen the internal emails that verify the belief that Mr.com was not protected. They're clear cut. So arguably, if they'd been put in front of me, I would have absolutely believed and accepted GCSB's work. So the point at which I can't see the dates, as I have the territory that I have a calendar in front of me, but I know that the point at which GCSB realised there was a problem was sometime after the 7th of September when Paul Davidson QC filed his affidavit to the court. That information, that affidavit, was sent to GCSB. GCSB then went and looked at their own file and said, maybe we've got a problem. They spent a few days working their way through it, confirmed, yep, we do have a problem. And on about the 13th of September, I think maybe the director was aware of it, he was overseas, and the first time he could see me in a secure environment was Monday the 17th.
Has the no surprises policy worked in this case, in your view?
Well, I don't believe they should have advised me about the operational matter that they're working with the police. I think the failure of no surprises was the ministerial certificate. So it's not Bill English, again, contrary to some opinions, not Bill English's responsibility to tell me to sign the ministerial certificate. It was my ministry's responsibility. I've raised that matter with the director, and he's made it quite clear that he agrees he should have done that.
Are you confident that the problem only goes back to 2009 and it doesn't go back to 2003 than the original association?
Well, as best as we can currently be aware, yes. So the issue is back to 2009, is in relation to the matter of whether the changing of the acts somehow changed things. So if you go back through Justice Naser's report, essentially, and this is really the basis of the era for all of the great conspiracies, the long and short of it is, the information has said this guy's been granted a visa, He's been granted one under the old law, and under the old law he wasn't protected. And it was that change to the new act that actually caused the problems.
Just on that, that Bill English certificate and it being the job of the department to review that, presumably Cabinet discussed the inquiry on that Monday, and you
what
came
Monday?
Out the 2 weeks, or whenever you announced the inquiry, I guess it was the 24th, at that meeting, and Bill was obviously at that meeting, and you came down here to the press conference and asked questions about it, and it was only after the press conference that you became aware of it, and not from the... So,
I don't know whether we did discuss it on Twitter. I mean, what happened on the 24th was, so when we came along, Adam or someone raised the story about being on the front page of the Herald in relation to another agency. I didn't have a clue what he was talking about, so with greatest respect, I didn't see that. So I thought, wow, that's pretty odd that I've missed the story. If it's on the front page of the Herald, normally read the Herald. I went back to my office and said, can someone get me that story? So I went and got a copy of the story. At that point, I looked at it and said, well, it's the 10th of August. I happened to know I'd be flying because my birthday's on the 9th of August, and I knew I flew out to the States that night. I never recall, so I didn't see the story on my iPhone. So basically, at that point, I started asking some more questions, and that's when the ministerial certificate emerged. And actually, I went and briefed Bill English. Well, I think it's under the ministerial certificate.
He knew
he'd done it at that point, but that's just, there's lots of paperwork there. It's I'd say it, but it's not unusual that the Minister of GCSB or the Minister of SIS, in this case it's me permanently, but sometimes acting, is signing warrants and signing pieces of paper. Of itself, it's not seen as highly unusual.
To sign a paper to deliberately keep an operation secret from the court, is that not a big deal? Is it not something you remember?
Not really, because again, if you take a step back and, accept these things, sometimes look different, but the whole ethos around GCSB and SIS is we do not comment publicly. So more often than not, if you want to go back and play back to recorders, think about the number of times I say, I'm not going to comment on that because it's a matter of national security. So the fact that they had involvement and he was signing a suppression order to say that their reputation, that they would, their name wouldn't be released in the courts, I don't think he saw that as that unusual. I mean, I think my ministry should have told me, but I don't actually believe it's Bill English's responsible to tell me.
Can you say ministry? You're talking about the
DPMC? No, I'm talking about GCSB, should I tell you.
So there was no request for an apology or no need for an apology from Bill?
I don't think Bill's done anything wrong at all. Look, I've seen the paperwork. It is absolutely black and white.
How many ministerial certificates have you guys issued?
Well, I don't think I've ever signed one. And obviously, by definition, it would probably be Bill's first, to the best of my recollection. But this is a case before the courts. I'm not sure we've ever seen a situation like that. So, I don't think it was presented to him that way. It was presented as a suppression order, and that was the mechanism required to suppress the name. Of itself, that wouldn't mean much to you.
So you regularly sign suppression orders?
That's what I'm saying. I don't think I've ever signed one. I said, I don't think I've ever signed one. From the best of my knowledge, it probably be his first one. But I don't think that there are issues before the courts that regularly. But if of itself, the technique to do that would not have seemed that unusual. That's the way it works.
Given the acknowledgement of unlawful surveillance,
yep.
Why shouldn't there be a police investigation? If you break the law, generally you face a sanction. Shouldn't this go to public confidence?
Well, that's a matter for the police if they want to have an investigation.
So you don't believe, then, you describe the press complaint as a stunt?
Well, I think it is a stunt, but, that doesn't mean the police won't investigate it. It's just a matter for the police, isn't it?
So it may be a stunt, but it may have some merit.
Well, I think it's a stunt because their argument was that I went to the police over the tape, T-tapes, and my view was, yeah, and that's because we actually had to get to the bottom of the facts there, and we did, and what we found was there was a prima facie case, right? That's what we found. In the case of this one, we found that we had a complete independent investigation. One of them's had an investigation, the other one didn't. But in the end, it's a matter for police.
You also said at the time it was a serious invasion of privacy. And
it was.
On a slippery slope towards tabloid journalism. If invasion of privacy is so important in a political case, yeah. Why is it not so important in Mr. Dotcom's case as far as...
It is. It's hugely important.
So that on that basis, the police should investigate?
No, well, I mean, why would the police investigate for something that we know what's occurred? But if they want to go and do that, it's up to them. They're free to do that. But the point here is, it's not like we don't know what's going on. We've had Justice Nasir's report, and I'm telling you, we know what's going on. You might not like it, but I think it's very serious, and that is why we've taken all the steps that we've taken. It's why we apologise. Look, at its most basic form, if GCSB doesn't understand who they can target and who they can't, they're failing in their duties, and they failed.
Is somebody at GCSB in the government for the breach of privacy in the same way that the Teapot Tapes were a breach of privacy?
Well, they may not be in a breach, they may not be in the gun for the way you have described that, but I would expect that people will be held accountable for their actions or inactions.
Because there might be a perception that no one's actually been held responsible.
Well, let's just wait and see when it's all over.
Will Rebecca Kitteridge be reporting back to you, and if so, will you be making that report public?
Well, I'd be very surprised if I made that report public, because I'd be very surprised if she writes one particular report, but she might write a number, but they'll be about the inner workings of GCSB, and I can't see any particular reason why I'd make that public. She reports to Ian Fletcher, but the director, and I'm sure her, will over time have plenty of comments to make to me about how we can improve the system.
Given that you say that we know what's gone on here and it's unlawful, so you're saying police suggesting a police investigation might be somewhat redundant.
Yeah.
But, okay, we know what's gone on here, it's unlawful, so surely we should have some charges then.
Well, again, there's quite a big difference between understanding what went on. We understood what went on in the tea tape, and there was a problem facing case. There was ultimately no charges because I agreed in the end to accept an apology, and on that basis drop my complaint. In this case, we know exactly what's going on. Whether that leads to charges of any sort, well, that's again a matter for the police. They have to determine whether there's a public interest and whether there is any wrongdoing and what it is.
But the police are somewhat compromised in this instance, aren't they?
I'm not sure I'd agree with that. I mean, they will take the complaint seriously, even if I see it as a political stunt, which it is. They will take it seriously, and they'll make their own decision what they're going
to
do.
Is there advice and their assurance that lead GSB to break the law?
Well, I think they were part. The way I would characterise that is not as cast iron black and white as that. I'd say they were part of the supply of information. But I still go back to GCSB and say, in the end, it was their responsibility to identify the status of Mr.com and whether he was protected or otherwise by the law, and they failed.
Is there any advice you've seen on the potential for damages from
Mr.com? I haven't seen any advice, but look, I'd be pretty amazed if there's much, but again, I'm sure he'll test them if he feels like it.
Was there any talk in Cabinet today or recently about the response to the housing affordability report?
No, we didn't talk about that specifically today. We've been talking about other issues. Well, yes, we talked about RMA reform, and we're getting closer to a bill being introduced about RMA reform. And obviously, housing affordability is one of the areas that we're concerned about. So, yes, we're making some progress.
So, quite substantial RMA reform?
There's likely to be two bills. So, one bill this year and another one next year.
And can you give us a brief overview of sort of what they're like, reducing subdivision costs and stuff like that?
I wouldn't want to characterise them yet, but you'll see it when Amy releases it. It should be soon.
So, you're building this travelling overseas tonight to meet with some of the good guns?
Jerry Brownlee's your answer. Is that the question? Jerry Brownlee's the answer, if I'm guessing your question. So you're going to ask me who's the acting head of GCSB? Okay.
What particular areas are you expect Mr. English might come back and talk to you about in terms of the risks?
Well, I mean, I think he's going to IMF and others, so I mean, this is his opportunity, as he does regularly, both to talk to investors in New Zealand bond markets, but also get a bit of a sense of the flavour of what's happening in the international economy. I think we all know that the European situation is quite serious. I mean, the ECB's been working hard to try and, you know, resolve those issues as best that they can, but these are long, deep-set problems. similarly think in the United States, a bit of a view on their economy. I mean, overall, I still think if you take a step back from what we see, you know, I still genuinely believe New Zealand's doing pretty well. I mean, we grew at 1.6% for the first half of the year, pretty much better than most other developed countries in the world. And relative to that weak international environment, which is clearly having some impact on China, overall I'd say New Zealand's not doing too badly, but it doesn't mean we can't do a lot better and we're working hard on that. But I think overall, I think you've got to see it in the backdrop of the international environment.
The Treasury's latest review of the monthly economic indicators for September, though, say that they reckon the second half of the year is going to be still growing, but weaker than that first half. Unemployment will remain high, and that national purchasing power has dropped for the first, well, only the second time since 2007. How worried are you by?
Well, obviously, I'd love the second half to be as strong as the first half was. But, you know, at the end of the day, all we can do is try and make sure that we're the most competitive New Zealand can be. And, again, the focus of the government's been very much, you know, to do that. Look, it's sort of hard second-guessing the forecasters, so let's sort of see how it plays out. But that international environment, particularly the weakness in Asia, is not helping them.
Okay, thank you.
See you soon.